Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
And you'll never see me coming.
Nothing goes over my head. My reflexes are too fast. I would catch it. There are no strings on me.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Pop Culture Rewind. I'm your host Travis.
And I'm Chris.
And we are back. Thank you once again for tuning in to another one of our episodes. Hope you enjoyed our last one that just came out. And this one is the long-awaited, no one asked for a sequel to one of our very first episodes we ever did for Pop Culture Rewind, which was episode number 2.
Earth's Mightiest Zeros.
Yes, we recapped very quickly phase 1 of the Marvel Universe. That was back
along with some other shit. I don't know how we crammed all that in an hour and a half.
We've gotten tired in old age because we take our time now.
We ramble.
So tonight's episode is going to be Marvel Phase 2. Recap, review, what we liked, what we didn't like, and then what are we looking forward to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, we just wrapped up Phase 2. We're in the middle of Phase 3 right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting there. Yeah, we're getting there. So, but Phase 3 is long.
Shit.
I don't know what's going to happen with Phase 3, but that's a long phase. But this one, Phase 2, said and done. There's only, what, 6 movies in it?
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, we're going to spend more time talking about than the other ones. But there was a lot of good gems, no pun intended, that came out of this phase.
I still argue that the phases should always end with Avenger movies.
I agree. Maybe because the first one did.
Yeah.
It seems apropos.
It seems like a good period.
Yeah,
End it on.
Because the first phase was so good as establishing classic characters in their own individual movies, and then it culminated in the ultimate team up movie.
Do you remember what the list was from the top of your head?
All right, we had Iron Man,
mm-hmm.
Incredible Hulk,
mm-hmm.
Thor,
mm-hmm.
Captain America, mm-hmm. and then Avengers.
Mm-mm.
Wait, what am I? Oh, Iron Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, that's,
and then Avengers.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
No, it was Captain America, then Avengers, because the last scene of Captain America was him running in the Times Square.
Oh yeah,
and looking
that's
around,
right.
And, yeah.
Okay. So it was Iron Man 2 and then Captain America.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll go with that.
We'll go with that. Yeah.
Because Avengers came out, and then like, okay, where do you go from here, right? The very next movie opening up Phase 2 is Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie came out May of 2013. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a critic score 79%.
Mm-hmm.
The audience score was 78%. So the critics liked a little bit more than the fans did. This was written and directed by Shane Black, which I like Shane Black. If you're not familiar with the work, he wrote all the Lethal Weapon movies. He did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Last Action Hero, I think, I want to say Long Kiss Goodnight also. A lot of good movies. You look up him up on IMDb, he's got a fucking resume. And it's this holds up. When Iron Man 3 first came out, I wasn't too solid behind it. But as I've gone back and had time to rewatch it and analyze it, I'm like, this shit holds up. This is actually pretty good.
I'm going to start off with I'm going to kill the biggest negative that this movie has.
Go ahead.
Okay. The reason why I think, in my opinion, the numbers don't reflect real opinion was because this movie came out about maybe a year and a half after The Dark Knight Rises. So this is basically Marvel's attempt at Dark Knight Rises. Dark Knight Rises, the biggest complaint was, oh my God, too much Bruce Wayne, not enough Batman.
Mm.
Oh my God, Iron Man 3, too much Tony Stark, not enough Iron Man.
Yeah.
And it was kind of basically the Iron Man's redemption story, just like mm-hmm. Dark Knight was Batman's redemption story. And I think the timing of it being so soon together is that they compared them both. And I guess maybe people hated them both equally. Because The Dark Knight, when you compare The Dark Knight Rises to The Dark Knight with Keith Ledger's last performance being an Oscar-nominated movie, winning a shit ton of awards, and then Dark Knight Rises kind of falling flat.
It sucked.
Yeah. And then Avengers building up everything we just got to in the first phase to top it off with a nice cherry on top and whipped cream with Avengers. And then you're kicking off phase two with a redemption story with Tony Stark. It, at that time, I don't know if a lot, if enough people were on board to appreciate it then the way a lot of people might appreciate it now.
Maybe, yeah. Retrospect, you can watch it with the clean slate. And that's what I did. I went back and watched most of these movies to kind of recollect yeah. some of my thoughts on it. This movie is actually, I mean, story wise, even then, it still holds up because this actually is like I just said, is the next movie right after Avengers. What happened in Avengers? Alien invasion. Who saved the fucking day? Iron Man did. He went into the portal, outer space, and destroyed all. So that's gotta fuck with your head, right? If you're just a human, right? Mm-hmm. You're seeing a lot of shit that you normally don't see, and he survived that shit. Yeah. So now he's going through having anxiety attacks. He's like having visions, and he's like
PTSD.
Yeah. Basically, that's what it is. We get the debut, if you will, of the Mandarin, which that was. Another issue that a lot of people had with this movie. Mandarin, he debuts because we've seen hints of Mandarin in the first two Iron Man movies.
The Ten Rings existed already. Yes. They had already made a good foundation for for them to come back to that.
And if you know comics, you know all that stuff. Ten Rings, Mandarin, he's got Ten Rings.
Yeah.
So you kind of put two and two together and you figure this out, but Mandarin debuts with like terrorist videos. It's going very realistic, very grounded in realism. And that goes back to the first movie, the first Iron Man. That's what a lot of people liked about the first movie. If you take out the whole sci-fi of the arc reactor thing, it's a totally grounded, realistic movie.
Yeah.
Other than him building the suit of iron.
And the realism, I think you touched on it already. That's one of my biggest pros. You know, for Avengers going sci-fi with the aliens and the Chitauri and all that. They made a great way of making it relatable to have Tony have PTSD and actually suffer the effects of that. As far as the Mandarin goes, the second biggest pro for me is the fact that we finally have a new villain. And that's in a sense of...
It could be a good thing or a bad thing.
That's in the sense of the Iron Man timeline. Iron Man 1, Iron Man's opponent is somebody else in armor.
Right.
The Monger. Iron Man 2, his biggest threat... Whiplash. Again, most of that was Stark Tech and arc reactor and all that.
Right.
So how much more are you going to do that? Are we going to have another movie with fucking robots? So now with the alien alien attack in Avengers, we actually have... We stick to that theme with the biological,
more sci-fi
and less mechanical.
Well,
that was a breath of fresh air for me, especially going with those first two movies. Because Whiplash towards the end... Even when you bring in a War Machine, it's like, oh man, this literally did feel almost like a carbon copy of Iron Man 1. So this one did try to make more of an effort to stand apart from the first two so that you can tell that this is different.
And we see a couple of connections to the comic book world where they introduce AIM. It's an organization that's been written. It's an evil organization, I guess. Yeah. They got henchmen and everything else. Another reference to the comics is the Extremist Project, which that's... From Iron Man comics, extremists, and they inject these humans with this
serum,
and it's supposed to replicate this super soldier thing, but it ends up it can overheat and make him a bomb, pretty much. And that's what's going on. You're seeing these bombs going off, and they're thinking it's the Mandarin, but it's actually AIM is actually throwing people up in these different locations, these landmarks, which. How does Tony get involved in this? Is Happy gets hit with one of these bombs, and then Tony calls out Mandarin on live on TV, gives him address and everything,
And he gets blown up. They fuck up his house.
Yeah, which hey, that, you know what? That's a badass scene as far as
calling out the threat.
Yeah. Besides that, and just the scene of that like the helicopter coming in, and plus by now in the whole Marvel universe, Tony's mansion is kind of a landmark on, it's on the mountainside, whatever, and it's looking out, and it's we've seen it through multiple movies.
It's hard to miss.
Yeah,
right on the side of Malibu, can't miss it.
Yeah, so his house gets destroyed by helicopters because he called out Mandarin, which the way he escaped and everything is very cool. He actually got his armor, which he's developing this new part of technology where he can just attach
the 42. Yeah. Mark 42.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, how he's been killing his own time is he's been making multiple fucking Iron Man suits like the whole time. Nobody knows about this.
Yeah.
Like,
no sleep because he, again, side effect of post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Yeah. And there's a nice scene with him and Pepper. He's like, I can't sleep. Like, you're my only thing that's... Because she's about to leave, right? Because she's getting frustrated. And he's like, you can't. Like, I got nothing, you know? So there's character-wise, that's what I'm talking about. Like, retrospect, looking back, they did a really good job with him dealing with what happened in the last movie.
Yeah.
And still being kind of in the trenches and stuff. And anyway, so he made this new Iron Man technology where it kind of comes to him, like, it attaches to him in pieces. And he actually did that with Pepper, and he had it save her, and then he called it to him after she was saved, and then he got out, and it was a really cool sequence. I'm not giving it justice, but it was a really cool visual to see it acted out on screen. Let's see. So, and that's where it leads into the second half of the movie where he is kind of just Tony Stark, because he lands in Tennessee. His suit's powered down. He can't power it anyway. He has no Jarvis, no nothing.
Yeah.
So he's dragging this whole suit of armor. He finds this little house and he finds a kid that's teams up with whatever, and which again could have been annoying, but really it wasn't.
Yeah. I'm surprised you've gone this far without the other biggest pro that I have on this movie. Again, sticking to realism.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, man! How are we going to have this machine of destruction, the war machine, represent our country? Look at it. It's freaking... It's ominous. All right, just slap a coat of paint on and call an Iron Patriot.
Yeah.
You know, and the political time we're in right now where people notice nuances like that, that's another facet of this movie that even now still holds up.
Right, yeah.
That they actually went that far to please the people. This is our hired gun.
Yeah.
Literally hired gun because he's over the shoulder. But, and the suit playing its own part in the movie where they use that to... when they capture Rhodey and they take his suit and they use him to use the suit to kidnap the president, that's a subplot that tied in very well. That if you weren't getting satisfied, if you thought you were getting too much Tony Stark, not enough Iron Man, then the whole stuff on the side with Iron Patriot would fill that gap where you wouldn't feel the withdrawal of, oh man, we need more suit heroism.
And the funny thing is, I remember again going back to the time of this movie actually coming out, a lot of people were kind of bitching about Iron Patriot because. If you know the comics, Dark Avengers, when the villains took the roles of the Avengers, Norman Osborn was Iron Patriot. And when you see Iron Patriot like this, it's like, oh, come on, get the fuck out of here. Yeah. You're not, you know. But it worked. I think it worked out because they actually poked a little fun at Iron Patriot. It's like, oh, you slapped a coat of paint on it and you called a different name, Iron Patriot. And I think he even made fun of Rhodey for calling it Iron Patriot or something. It was a lot of kind of tongue-in-cheek type stuff, but... So it kind of goes on. They're on the chase to try to find Mandarin and things like that. They find that you just talked about them stealing Iron Patriot and they came down to the president and everything. But they finally finds out where the Mandarin is. Okay.
Did you see that coming?
No, no one did because it didn't make any sense when it first happened. But he finds the Mandarin and lo and behold, Mandarin, quote unquote, is just. Some washed-up actor pretending to be Mandarin,
off the royalties, not real, and admitting that everything that was show, as far as like the assassination that they aired live on television, that was all smoke and mirrors. That didn't really happen.
Yeah,
and he's like half drunk, half stoned, half horny. He's like, he's not all there. Like he has no idea. He has no idea that this is a big play.
He passed out while Tony's trying to talk to him.
Yeah. With a beer in his hand.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Let's see.
I do like the one shot. I think the next movie, there's a one shot, like a bonus, like the side scene.
Where they
show
the one shot.
Yeah, where they show the Mandarin in the jail. And like he kind of starts pretending to throw his weight around. Mm-hmm. You end that little cut scene. With the thought in your mind that maybe he could be the next Mandarin.
What happened in that was they said, we need to talk to you. And they bring him to an interrogation room. They sit him down. And the reporter, whoever it is, he's got a camera on him. And you see him. He's asking him questions. And he hits the stop button. He's not recording anymore. And then he starts asking him about why are you impersonating the Mandarin? And you have no respect, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, whatever, dude. Is this the role? And you see him like... rolling back his sleeves, the reporter's rolling back his sleeves, and he's got the 10 rings tattoo. The camcorder that he had is actually ejecting, like he's making a gun, like it's like putting together a gun.
Nice.
And then he tries to assassinate him, but he finally he gets free, and he says, "Someone wants to see you," and he's like, "Do I know him?" And then he says, "No, but you've been pretending to be him." But you took his name. That's what it was. You don't know him, but you took his name. And that's when we find out, okay, Mandarin is probably real, and we're eventually going to get to that event, you know, at some point in the Marvel timeline.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was, I think, the saving point. Matter of fact, a big con that I had on this movie was Mandarin being
fake.
Yeah. But I even put on here a little asterisk that is corrected in the follow-up one-shot movie that they made. Another thing I didn't like about this movie was Guy Pearce as Killian...
Aldrich Killian.
Aldrich Killian. You know, Marvel does a really good job on their movies, but the one constant I think you can say about them is their villains really kind of wishy-washy sometimes. Mm-hmm. If at best, they're good.
We're going to touch on that several times in this, in this podcast.
This dude, Killian...
geek turned rebellious, revengeous.
It's a revenge story. Yeah. I mean, it's really...
And you're gonna have the botanist, Tony Stark's one of his many exes.
Yeah,
use him as a
That's how the movie starts off. It's like a flashback to '99 or something, New Year's Eve.
The biggest, the other flaw I have, honestly, looking back at this movie, watching it fresh through the timeline, I didn't have that many flaws on it. But the other biggest flaw, even then, remembering when this first movie came out, was okay, you gave me the Avengers, so we should be having the Avengers in all of these movies. So they damn near got rid of Tony Stark's house. You don't mean to tell me Captain America or Thor is going to lend a hand and squash this shit? Like, this should have been an hour-long movie.
Well,
and to me, that I'm sure that fear was assuaged throughout the timeline. But I'm pretty sure once we got all the Avengers in one movie, a casual viewer might have been thinking, well, why doesn't somebody else come help Tony from drowning or from his apartment to get blown up? He damn near called out the Mandarin on TV, so I'm sure the heroes should have heard that, just like all the villains heard it. So what's up with that, you know?
And that's a good point. And matter of fact, that will be rectified in future Marvel movies because damn near every single movie
has somebody.
Has some kind of team up with somebody. Yeah. And we'll get to that in this phase, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, of course, they all come together at the end. Rhodey, he gets the suit back. He saves the president. They're on this big boat, this docking boat.
Yeah.
Shipping containers and everything. And this is where I can't remember what protocol he calls it, but he...
The clean slate.
That was to... destroy them all, right?
Oh, the house party protocol.
And he brings out all these suits that were underneath the house that did not get destroyed.
Yeah.
And that was kind of fun seeing all this shit going on.
The Disney reference calling one of them Eeyore. The one that apparently at the beginning when all the trailers came out, a lot of fans thought that was the Hulkbuster armor. The one that Eeyore wore, the big blue one that came and sturdied the thing from falling apart, and you can see the discs in the neck like transform for support.
Yeah.
At first glance, people thought that was the Hulkbuster outfit. Well, because it was bigger than all the other ones he had, you know. But
we'll get to that.
You'll get to that later. Yeah. But
So I didn't like Guy Pearce as the villain. Mandarin thing, we already talked about that. I think I mentioned this before. I did like the helicopter attack scene. I thought that was beautifully done as far as cinematically told. I think it from beginning to end, that was good. And also, it's kind of wishy-washy going back and forth like this, but I think Tony making do without his armor and seeing him like infiltrate there was a couple scenes where he had to infiltrate the base, the villain's base. And he just had to do it with like sneak attacks, and he was throwing like bombs out and stuff like that.
He had like one charge.
Makeshift gun. And
yeah, he had one repulsor blast charge that he used.
Yeah, they utilized his assets where they needed to be. And I thought that played out very good. So during this movie, Pepper gets infected with the extremist thing. Mm-hmm. And so that actually helps her surviving the fall that she did during the end. But he ends up curing her at the end off scene. You don't see, you hear it if you listen, that's what they say. Then they take out the shrapnel out of his heart, so he doesn't need the
reactor core.
Yeah, he doesn't need that anymore, Which now I guess he's got a big hole in his chest. Like, I don't understand.
No, they probably just sewed him up, and now all the...
Yeah, so it's a big hole. Like, the whole...
Graft skin.
It was a deep, like... You remember Iron Man 2 where he had, like... She had to, like, dig into his chest? Yeah,
That was part one.
Was that part one? Oh, yeah. That was part one. Yeah.
Just don't take out the blade! Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? It's like a big hole in his chest. Like, the logistics of that, the physics of that, I'm trying to figure out what happened. What does it look like? And this is a big plate, like a little dummy plate they put in there and just sealed it up like that, I guess. I don't
know. It lights up during Christmas.
There you go.
Mood lighting when you get intimate.
Yeah. Oh, and then at the end, he does destroy all the suits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But apparently he's got one or two, just in case.
Yeah.
Right. But anything else about Iron Man 3?
That's it for Iron Man 3.
Okay. Yeah, it didn't take too long. Yeah.
So here, we're going to...
Do you have anything else? Okay.
No.
Oh,
that's it for Iron Man 3.
Okay.
So we move on to the next movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Thor or Captain America?
Thor.
Well, Thor. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I wrote it. I noted these out of order. But we'll go with that. Thor 2.
Yes, indeedy.
The Dark Elves. The Dark World.
Yeah. This one, Rotten Tomatoes, the critics gave it 66%. Ugh. And audience liked it 77%. So
the first one, the numbers must have been a lot worse because... Overall, all the people that I heard that watched the first movie thought that the second Thor movie was better than the first one.
Really? Yeah. I've never heard anybody say they like the second one over the first
really?
One.
Really?
Hmm. I agree. I like Thor 1 over Thor 2. This definitely has its flaws, I think. Mm-hmm. Again, taking place after Avengers, but unlike Iron Man 3, it's not really necessary to establish the fact that Avengers had already happened.
Yeah.
Other than... Thor being on Earth, but that happened in Thor 1.
Yeah.
So it's not needed to watch Avengers to understand what the hell is going on in this one. But this is all about these dark elves on their dark world. That
I remember watching this movie, and on my cons list, I'm looking at the screen like, wait, that little thing is the enemy? You're going to have to give me a little more than that.
Here's the thing. I'll go right into one of the pros I liked about this movie.
Go.
Again, with the villains, I didn't mind the Dark Elves. The Christopher Eccleston, he played the main Dark Elf, and I think I have his name somewhere around here. Probably not. But
I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, they all have weird names and shit.
Malekith.
There you go. Look at you. Look at you. Talk about calling me surprised. God damn. All right. So... I liked him. I like him as an actor, Eccleston. And as far as the Dark Elves go, I love the... I don't know if they're intending on doing this, but this is what I got from what I saw. They combined fantasy with the elves, with the long ears and being elves, with sci-fi, with the spaceships and the technology and shit. So it was a cool like mesh between those two genres.
The more that I saw Malekith's supporting cast and his method of getting around... The more I was starting to come around on Malekith as a threat.
Right.
First sight, him being hibernated for X amount of years, not having any of the stones, not having any real power other than just being another elf.
Yeah.
At first impression is like, eh. Seeing his entourage, okay, he's kind of a big fucking deal.
He's got a big army. That's what it is. And the backstory of all this is years, years ago, they actually were defeated by the Asgard and Odin and all that. They defeated them. Because they're trying to get this ether or aether, whatever it's called.
Yeah, one of the Infinity Stones that was liquefied.
Well, we didn't know about that. We didn't know that's what it was until I think the end, the post credit scene, when
the Collector, 2 down, 6 to go, because they
at that time he had one. Guardians hadn't had him yet.
Yeah, that's right.
So he said 1 down, 4, 5 to go. I think that's what he said. So yeah, that's when we find out that the ether is an Infinity Stone.
Yeah.
I can't remember which infinity it is, which stone it is. Reality. Is it reality? I think.
Yeah.
Because they go from place to place.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know. I always get this shit.
Or time? The time gem?
Shit. Maybe we should look that up. Maybe you can look that up for us or something. I don't know. But anyway, that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to get the ether back. And he's not. He's in slumber, like you said, until here we get Jane Foster, Natalie Portman.
Snooping around in a man's business.
Yeah. And she touches it. She gets stuck in this portal thing and she yeah, she touches it and it wakes him up that someone's activated the shit. Yeah. And then he finds out where they're at and everything. Thor comes down because he senses all this shit, and then he takes her to Asgard, and they find out
family drama.
Oh Lord Jesus!
Oh, you told your dad about me. Oh my God, I do declare I'm the vapors. You know?
And this is kind of a con for me in this movie. Just Jane Foster in general, Natalie Portman. I think all her stuff just kind of dragged down the movie for me.
The con for me, as far as Jane Foster goes, is the lack of payoff.
Yeah,
you know, we start the movie and it's like, dude, Jane Foster, she's just a human, man. She's gonna be around for what, a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
You got Lady Sif there. She's had her eyes on you for quite a while. Y'all fought together. Y'all celebrate together. Why don't you, it's time to settle down and knock up Lady Sif a couple thousand times. You know, for him to bring Jane Foster, a human, into Asgard, I would have appreciated more of not so much a rivalry, but some noted jealousy between Sif and Jane.
There was
nothing.
There
was no, and if you're gonna make,
it's like Sif gave up. Like she just gave up. She's like, oh well, I guess.
You know, for all the effort of having Jane on Asgard, you should have had more of a payoff that involved more of the characters on Asgard. And I think that would have driven the case home if there would have been, or maybe there's a deleted scene that I haven't seen of Sif and Jane in the room face to face, like. You know I can kill you by a snap my fingers. And right. Jane's like, you're still not going to get Thor's dick. You know, right? Something to justify, holy crap, you're going to have those pieces of that puzzle.
I think that was
and you don't want to put them together. Yeah. You have both those pieces of the puzzle and you don't want to put them together to see what it's going to look like. That's a wasted opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
When they're in Asgard, this is where we see Loki. Loki's in prison. This is where Avengers first would make sense.
Well, even now, if you didn't watch Avengers, you could still think that Loki's in prison because of Thor 1. So you don't really need Avengers.
No, we thought he was dead in Thor 1 because he fell off the bridge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they thought he was dead until Avengers. Yeah, because actually this is the first time we see Asgard is Thor is bringing Loki to Odin.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, and then he gets thrown in prison there, but there's one prisoner that's taken in, and we find out he actually works for the Dark Elves. He's got this bomb or something inside him.
Oh yeah, I love that.
And it like makes him like it hulks him up, I guess. Yeah. And goes on a fucking killing spree. He's able to bust out. I actually like that where he's inside that cell and he kills off all these dudes except for one. He picks up the one and slams him against the electrified cell until it breaks down and he smashes through. So then all hell breaks loose. He starts smashing out all the other cells.
Yeah.
And then he sees Loki. He kind of stares on Loki.
And Loki's like, it's the stairs, second door to the left.
Yeah.
Not knowing he led the dude to kill his mom.
Yeah.
Or stepmom.
Yeah.
Or foster mom. Whatever you want to call it. I don't know how that works in Asgard, but yeah, it's not. Yeah, so.
And this is where the big hulking dude, he goes up and he confronts Frida, Thor's mom. Mm-hmm. And that's where Natalie Portman is at also.
Yeah. Malekith and the super super strong guy,
right? Yeah. And he ends up killing Thor's mom, so she ends up dying because Loki led him to that room. And that was actually pretty cool when Thor like came in and just like threw his hammer right at him and
missed it.
Wait, I think he nicked him.
The ship teleported to invisibility.
The lightning struck his face or something like that. Something hit me and Baylor got away. And then he chunked the hammer at him, and it, So it's a cool, cool scene altogether. But, Eric Selvig, he's gone crazy since the events of the Avengers. That's another thing. I guess you do have to watch Avengers for to find out why the hell he's acting like this. Because again, of him being controlled, and he's
by the staff.
Yeah. But he's still able to come up with a plan for the Convergence, which is another plot point that's going on in this thing. All nine realms
align.
Are about to align, and when that happens, that's when the Dark Elves...
It's the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
The realms are the most vulnerable.
Yeah. That's why Malekith is trying to attack now while this is happening. And he's got some plot devices, these little stakes that they got to nail into the ground. And let's see.
So in order to stop him... Thor's got a plan.
Yeah.
To sneak out of Asgard. Mm-hmm. Gets the group together, but he needs one more guy. Captain America for my complaint of where are the Avengers.
Right.
At least that complaint was satiated for me because I got to at least see, if nothing else, a cameo,
right.
A legit cameo. This isn't like somebody wearing a mask. This was right. Chris Evans as Captain America in like those 10 seconds being like Human Torch smartass Chris Evans from the old Fantastic
right,
Four.
Right.
Like him being, oh, I feel so patriotic in this. Rides a bit up in the crotch, but land of the free, home of the blow, or whatever. So, I found that very entertaining. And the fact that everybody in this clique, one by one, you know, if you turn your back on him, I'm going to fuck you up. Next person, Lady Sif, you turn your back on him, I'm going to fuck you up. And then the other guy, Volstagg.
There you go.
Volstagg. I don't know how I'm memorizing all this shit. Volstagg's
no
like,
shit.
Volstagg's like, if you turn your back on him, I'm gonna fuck you up.
No, he stops. It looks like, let me guess,
you're gonna fuck me up?
Yeah.
Take a number.
So Thor, Loki, and Jane all go to the Dark World. They confront the elves. They get the ether taken out of Jane because Loki kind of playing on his own. Well, Loki and Thor had their own little ruse.
Yeah.
To pretend like they were fighting each other.
Even Jane's, I don't even think Jane knew
she... Because Loki cut off Thor's hand and...
Yeah.
I think
it might have caught a lot of people in Marvel off guard that Tom Hiddleston's portrayal of Loki in the Thor movie and in the Avengers movie was so well received that he became like a fan favorite that people wanted the heel to turn good.
Yeah.
And... motive sight unseen because we haven't seen Ragnarok or there hasn't been any even post Avengers there hasn't been anything with Loki, so we don't know how. All we know that the movie ends that he's still alive, but at the moment the battle scene where Thor and Loki team up to fight Malekith.
Well, and after all this they think they won, and then one of the soldier Zooks come back and he actually ends up stabbing Loki.
Yeah,
and Thor freaks out. He thinks he's dead.
Yeah.
One of these days, he's going to remember that Loki is the god of mischief.
Yeah.
One of these days. I'm not sure when that's going to be. But anyway, so
he earned some credibility by saving Jane from getting blown up from... I don't even know if this is the correct term, but it's kind of a compression bomb instead of... just compressed everything into nothingness.
Yeah.
And that's what Loki used to kill the monster that killed him.
Right.
Before Loki dies. So being the leader of the... Prince of Mischief, he earned some credibility by doing the things that he did. So Thor's last thought is, oh my god, this guy, he fucks with me all the time.
Right.
You know? Which plays off later.
Yeah, right. So while they're on that world, Jane and Thor, they find a portal back to Earth, conveniently. Reunites with Eric and Darcy, which she's back. Kat Dennings and her boobs are back.
God. Oh man, your brother? Oh, my brother's dead. Oh, thank God! Not realizing that he saved Thor from actually being there.
Right.
You know, but that moment was just awkwardly hilarious.
Oh, with Eric and...
Yeah, the Selvig.
Well, because he still thinks Loki's...
An asshole.
Yeah. they figure out the convergence point is conveniently where they're at in London.
Yeah.
Very convenient. Thor fights. Malekith comes down in the big-ass ship. I wrote down in my notes lots of wibbly wobbly stuff happens because here's one of my biggest flaws in this movie. The cons is the final scene, Thor and Malekith going back and forth to another world. It got comical, like they're bouncing around and
Thor's in the subway tunnel.
Yeah,
like how do I get to Stockholm? Oh, third exit. Like oh.
Meanwhile, his hammer's going across and trying to find back and. We get these jets that are flying in and going through another world and stuff. Yeah. And it was a mess. Like, it was too much of a... What's the word I'm looking for?
Stick?
I guess. Yeah, I'll go with that. It was a cluster. We'll say that. But obviously, he finds a way and he destroys Malekith in the smoke of all this ether shit.
He sends him back to his other dimension and the ship falls right on top of him, crushing him to death.
I always like that phrase, crushing him to death. I don't know, but yeah, it's and then the portal took care of all the other conveniently took care of everything else. Convenience. I think I'll summarize the movie in convenience. Okay, so one of the last things we see, of course, they wrap up everything on Earth. Everything's fine, whatever. We go back to Asgard, and we find out. Actually, that Loki is alive, and he's posing as Odin. What happened to Odin, and what's Loki gonna do?
Yeah,
that was my two takeaways from that movie. I was
my biggest takeaway was that Thor actually put his brother over to his brother's biggest critic, stepdad.
Yeah,
like told stepdad, look, Loki's not as bad as you think he is. He did X, Y, Z, and he needs to be.
Well, he was talking to Odin. Yeah, assuming not knowing he was Loki. Yeah, and I think that
maybe that pays off in Ragnarok that you know he was willing to step up for me.
Yeah.
To my biggest critic, maybe I should get this guy's back, and maybe we'll get. We got a piece of Loki's redemption in here in Dark World, but maybe we'll get the rest payoff, of it at Ragnarok.
The post credit scene on this one, because you know that's the staple, is you have to stay to the credits. If you don't know, you're fucking stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Post credit scene was the reveal that Ether, we already talked about this, was an Infinity Stone. Mm-hmm. Did you ever find out which
no,
Infinity
I didn't Stone? Look.
God damn it. Someone's going to call us out on it. So, but the pros was, for me, a pro was Loki. It's Tom Hiddleston. He knocks it out of the park when he plays Loki. Mm-hmm. His charisma is freaking off the charts when he's playing Loki. Yeah. I don't know what it is about him. And I said before, the design of the Dark Elves and everything else. Cons was the end battle for me. And then Natalie Portman and other human characters just took away from the overall Thor, Asgard, Dark Elves story.
I would like to see my payoff for Loki is in Ragnarok. If he has to die, the final scene is him fighting off whoever the villain is, finally worthy of carrying Thor's hammer. Like, using it to kill the people before he dies. Like, you've built up so long that he went from this uninhabitable creature to actually someone that will...
It's a redemption story.
A redemption story. So why not pay that off with him being able to carry Thor's hammer, at least to save Thor or to save somebody, to actually center that and, like, tie that off with a bow.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to Ragnarok. It's ridiculous.
Again, that solves another issue where it's like, okay, so where the fuck are the Avengers? We need them in every movie. Yeah, we're getting Hulk. We're literally getting Planet Hulk, a sense of Planet Hulk with having it's gonna be Hulk, Valkyrie, Loki, and Thor.
Yeah,
so it's gonna be good.
So look, oh god, the trailers themselves have sold me. Like, take my money now, motherfucker. All right, so we go. Iron Man 3 was okay, not bad. Thor 2 kind of went down a little bit. We're about to go on the up trail here. We're going to hit the mark here with Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier.
I'm going to be up front. You're going to have to help me out with this.
Okay.
I watched it recently. I remember maybe a year ago when we did the year in review, I remember saying Captain America was one of my favorite movies.
Hmm.
And me being a casual Marvel fan, I haven't read any of the books. I'm not familiar with the whole Captain America intricacies, whatever that word is. I have no cons at all on Winter Soldier. None.
You know what? If there's any cons, I'm going to get to my pros and cons here in just a minute. But I'm not even going to call my cons. I'm going to call them nitpicks. Because that's the closest I can come up with. Because that's how good this fucking movie is.
For the complaint that I've had and before this movie and even after this movie that Marvel movies can be formulaic, this was completely out of left field. I was not expecting a political thriller with Robert Redford as the villain. I think this is the first movie where Marvel finally started to hit their stride on what works and what doesn't work, because again, I can't find a flaw in this movie. And there's enough known characters where you feel like you don't need the Avengers, because you have Captain America, you have Black Widow there, you're introducing the Falcon, you have the Winter Soldier, who's again going through his own redemption story where he's starting to figure out that his past is a lot better than what his present's turning out to be. And dude, Redford and Nick Cage just blend the whole thing together like really well.
Yeah, going back to what you're saying about Marvel hitting their stride, this is also a turning point in that you can start to see that Marvel can do different types of stories as well. Like in this one, we have the political spy thriller in Winter Soldier. Next up, we're going to have a sci-fi epic with Guardians of the Galaxy. We had
A heist movie coming up in our list with Ant-Man.
Yeah, so you have these different types of genres within the superhero genre, and it works. Like, this one in particular works. Now, this was directed by Anthony and Joe Russo, the Russo brothers, who are also, they directed Civil War, and they are also going to direct Infinity War also. So, if you like this one, you know where they're going with this one. Now, this is written by, you don't hear these names much, Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely. These guys, they're on board with Marvel. They're part of the framework with Marvel. They did Captain America, the First Avenger.
Nice.
They did Thor, Dark World. They did Civil War. They created the Agent Carter series.
Oh, my God. That's like a love note to 60s television.
Yeah. And then they did, they're doing Infinity War also. So when you talk about the structure of Marvel, you got Kevin Feige, obviously. You have the Russos. You had Joss Whedon for a cup of coffee. You have these two guys. They're part of the structure, but you don't really hear about these two guys' names a whole lot when you talk about how well Marvel's doing and the success that they're having. But these two guys, they're knowing their shit. I mean, they're doing everything that they need to be doing. But yeah, like you said, this movie, it opens up. We have the introduction of Sam Wilson, who's going to go on to play the Falcon in this movie. And the chemistry right off the bat between them two, it works.
Yeah.
It works so well, which is good because you need that chemistry. Because if you go by the comics, Captain America and Falcon, they're side by side in the comics, almost like he's almost like a sidekick to Captain America. Yeah.
There's some spinoffs where Sam takes over the mantle as Captain America.
Yeah, that's more recently too. Yeah. They did it way back when but that's another story. Okay, so the first thing we get as far as action goes, Black Widow picks him up and goes on a SHIELD mission. These SHIELD agents are captured, taken hostage. They fight Baltroc.
Baltroc the Leaper?
Yeah, who's played by George St. Pierre.
That's what probably my most favorite pro of this movie is.
What?
And that comes back to a couple of things. Number one, I'm not the biggest, but I'm a pretty decent-sized UFC fan. So I'm familiar with George St. Pierre's career. As boring as some of his fights are. And I'm a huge fan of Street Fighter, Capcom versus Marvel. So if you pay attention to that literally felt like we got the side-by-side viewing. We didn't get to see like them moving around in circles. It literally felt like a 2D fighting platformer.
It did. I didn't think
back
about
and
that.
Forth. You know, and I loved that visual. Yeah. And GSP keeping up, because he has no soldier serum. He's just a normal dude that knows how to fight, and he's decently built.
Right.
Him being able to stand up he gets that, but damn, dude. Came close. I was enjoying those 2.5 minutes of those guys fighting, and then leading up to that going that one on one Street Fighter thing. I fucking loved it.
Oh,
dude.
Before I forget, I do love in this whole movie to take it totally in a different direction and being its own thing. He's not even wearing his Captain America garb. He's wearing his Steve Rogers Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. costume, which that was introduced more recently in the comics, so I was kind of impressed to see that already introduced in the series. And it made sense because it's more grounded. It's not as flamboyant as, hey, look at me, I'm a freaking American flag on wheels, you know? So, anyway, I enjoyed that. So, in this mission, he actually sees Black Widow going off on her own and stealing information. And, of course, that's not part of the mission, so he doesn't like that. He reports to Fury. Fury says, well, you're on need to know. You didn't need to know.
Yeah,
pretty much. But he introduces him to this Project Insight, which is basically three helicarriers that's armed to the teeth, and they're controlled by satellites. So you know this ain't gonna end well.
No.
Right then and there.
Not protection. It's fear.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they even said that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he says, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. This was actually, to me, this felt like the precursor to Civil War, where you already have somebody's ideologies clashing with what you think is common sense.
Well, because Steve Rogers is such like cut and dry.
Yeah.
Right is right, wrong is wrong. There's no gray area, and this ain't right. This, like you said, this is fear. And
I've been there, done that. I know where this goes.
Yeah. He said something along those lines. Yeah. I know what fear takes you to, or whatever. So after that, he goes and he visits a Steve Rogers museum or something, like Captain America museum, which I thought was kind of cool. And then he sees an aging, elderly, dying Peggy Carter, which I didn't recognize Haley Atwell at all. Like, that makeup was...
Wait, that was Haley Atwell?
Yeah.
Really?
I didn't recognize her.
I don't recognize
her. I had to check IMDb because I didn't... Didn't look like it at all.
I know there wasn't any flashback scenes that shows young Haley Atwell.
That was bad makeup.
Oh, yeah. Good Lord.
Okay, so back to Fury. He gets locked out of his own project, right? He's trying to figure out what's going on. And then this is where we introduce to Secretary Pierce, who's played by Robert Redford, like you were saying. And he tells him to delay the project. Something's not right.
All the while, there's a hit on Nick Fury.
This is where you find out. Fury's on the road. And he's ambushed. There's cars pulls up, and he's ambushed on the street. And then he... That's actually a pretty cool scene, actually, him trying to get away from those... all the four cars, and he finally is able to get out of that, only to run into Winter Soldier we see for the first time, looking like a fucking badass.
Oh, hell yeah. Which, by the way, this apparently was verified through people on the Marvel side. But apparently, if you pay attention, there's two scenes in that escape route that cars are being moved out of the way by this huge, like, yellow Penske truck. Apparently, that was the Punisher.
Oh, what?
That was verified through Marvel that was going to be some kind of intro for the Punisher. Hmm. That he was the one that coincidentally twice saved Nick Fury from getting captured. If you get a chance to watch the movie again later on,
okay, I'll keep that in mind. I didn't
look,
hear
me. Look at that scene, and you'll see that same yellow Penske truck twice.
So you think it's kind of like a retroactive thing, like what they did with Spider-Man,
saying that that little kid he saved in Iron Man 1 is actually Peter Parker, and they timed out the whole thing.
They got lucky.
Hey, but hey, if it makes it work, it makes it work.
I know.
Like, I'm not complaining. Shit,
we didn't see his name anywhere. That could be. But he gets attacked by Winter Soldier. He does escape underground, and that's the last we see him for a while. I'm sorry. The next scene, Captain America goes back to his apartment, and
Nick's there.
Well, and we are introduced to Agent 13, who's Sharon Carter, who's, I think, Peggy's niece or something like that.
That's not revealed until Civil War.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Spoiler?
But yeah.
Yeah. and then she's like, oh, I think you left your radio on. And he's like, okay, thanks. And then he's like, wait a minute. So he sneaks around, and he goes inside, and that's when he sees Fury, and Fury lets him know, hey, you know, don't say anything.
Yeah.
Shield is compromised. He's about to tell him something, and he gets shot a couple times.
By Winter Soldier.
And this is where Cap jumps out the window. I think he sees him for the first time.
Yeah, but he throws him the shield, and Winter Soldier catches it with the bionic arm.
He catches it like that and throws it back at him, and that's where he gets away.
So all these teases building up to the reveal that the Winter Soldier's Bucky Barnes and Captain America finally finds it out.
Yeah.
So well done.
So he goes back to check on Fury. They get Fury to a hospital, which he, quote-unquote, dies at the hospital. Cap gets blamed for Fury's death. He goes in there and talks to Pierce, and Pierce thinks...
Why was he in your apartment?
Yeah. What are you not telling us? And that's why he thinks that Cap is... That's
compromised.
So
does that lead to the elevator scene?
Yes, it does.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Just the build up to that scene when he's getting in there, and then we
cut the tension.
We see Frank Grillo. I can't remember his character's name, but
I can't remember the soldier's name, but he evolves into Crossbones.
Yes, yeah, in Civil War we see him as Crossbones. But him and his crew, his attack squad, they're in there, and they kind of surround him, and then they go down to another floor, and then another group of people come in and surround him, and then they're like, then one more time.
Yeah. No, some people get off, because there was some in suit and tie, and they got off, and then more people came in.
Oh, okay.
And Cap's like, if anybody wants to get off, now's the time to do it.
Well, because he sees, like, there's people holding stuff, and he sees one dude sweating, and he's like, okay, some shit's about to go down. Yeah. That's when he says, if anybody wants to get off before we start this, let's just go in.
Yeah.
And then that's when
the
attack ensues.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, awesome fight scene. He of course, defeats all of them. He escapes through the glass elevator. That fall where he landed in the center of the
lobby, superhero landing.
he's like boof, like his side, like
yeah.
He puts his shield down, and he just like the impact that his the way it was filmed was like, splack, like it was very painful looking even for him. But he gets up and goes. And then that's where we get the jet coming after him.
Yeah, he escapes. He finds a motorcycle and escapes through the garage before the doors close. And he gets out. Finds refuge over at Sam's apartment.
No, that's after. He gets with Black Widow.
Okay.
And then they travel to New Jersey because they got some kind of lead that there's some info in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
yeah.
when they steal the truck, and then they drive down to New Jersey, and they find an old...
the old S.H.I.E.L.D. base where Captain America was training before Soldier Serum.
Right. So they go in the old... He said, wait, that's not the right place. Yeah. And he goes in there, and it's like your old S.H.I.E.L.D. base, whatever. And then, he notices a draft or something, and he says they find a hidden place, and he says, well, if you're already hidden, what do you need to hide? And he goes in this other room,
and they find
Arnim Zola. Which, okay, this scene doesn't feel like it at first, but this is a very important scene, if not the most important scene in this movie, in the future of what happens to S.H.I.E.L.D. and in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well too.
We didn't even mention that Thor Dark World is the first taste of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. tying together, because right. they were at the library where that final battle happened post Thor.
Right.
And then I think after the mid-season finale of season 2 is where the fallout of the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. of the old Hydra S.H.I.E.L.D. and right. then the rebuilding of something different. So Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did play a part in this.
Okay, so what we find out in this scene is, you know, because Arnim Zola was in the first Captain America mm-hmm. movie. And to remind you, out of all the movies we've seen, this is technically a sequel to the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
So Arnim Zola, we find out after Captain America, he got captured in the war or whatever, that the U.S. brought him over. S.H.I.E.L.D. actually hired him for intel, but he actually ended up compromising S.H.I.E.L.D. and started
making moles
within S.H.I.E.L.D. mm-hmm. for Hydra, and then started compromising S.H.I.E.L.D. even more, and then making S.H.I.E.L.D. the one that's actually starting all these wars
mm-hmm.
that kind of changed the scope of the world and everything. And so now basically what the reveal is that S.H.I.E.L.D. is basically Hydra at this point.
Yeah.
There's so many moles. There's so many...
You don't know what's what.
Yeah.
Cut off the head of one?
And two grow back. Yeah. So,
hell, Hydra.
So, yeah, that's the reveal. And this whole time he's explaining this, he says he was stalling time as he's got missiles.
Ballistic missile yeah. was coming to get him.
And so he gets loaded up with Captain America and Black Widow, but they escape. That's when they go to Sam Wilson's place.
Yeah.
And then that's when he says, hey, I want to be a part of this. And that's...
They have something that I need.
Yeah.
Which was basically the Falcon suit.
Right.
The last one, I guess.
Yeah, so it was an experimental project, whatever. He said, I thought you were a pilot. I said, I never said a pilot. So yeah, that's a very important, and that revelation that S.H.I.E.L.D. is actually a Hydra, that ties directly into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which actually ended up hurting Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I thought, because it changed the whole directive of what they're trying to do, and they had to rework everything that they were working on, and
yeah.
feel kind of bad for the writers of that show who had to
deal with the changes.
Yeah. But that changed the direction of the Marvel just in general, because
universe.
S.H.I.E.L.D. was from the get-go, the from Iron Man 1, we Agent Coulson, and that's yeah. what they're used to working with. They're used to working with S.H.I.E.L.D. on everything, but now they can't really do that, so... okay, so they hide out with Wilson. They kidnap Agent Sitwell, who was also from the start with Coulson, which we find out, we see him with that, with Gary Shandling, his mm-hmm. his character, who Iron Man didn't like.
Yeah. Had very much reason to not like him because he was part of Hydra.
Yeah. So they capture him.
Rest in peace, Gary Shandling.
Yeah. So they capture Sitwell. They find out he reveals even more what Hydra's yeah. planning on doing with the helicarriers and what they basically Arnim Zola. I had to watch this a couple times. Okay, so Arnim Zola has this.
His mind has been added. Has been
his algorithm. It's got an algorithm to determine who's a super.
Also, yeah.
So who has powers and this and that, and they're gonna
wipe out all the
wipe
few superhumans.
Them all out.
Yeah.
And they're actually changing that to make it to where it's all humans. It's like everybody. Mm-hmm. They're gonna wipe out everybody pretty much, right? I think
yeah.
that's okay. So, obviously, they got to get back into the S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters. But they find out there's these little chips, circuit boards that they can put in each one of the mm-hmm. helicarriers. And they can take control back from them.
Did we completely just skip over the part where Captain America finds out that Winter Soldier is Bucky? Where in the timeline did you write all that down?
No. Okay. They find out about Hydra's plan. On the way back, they're in the freeway.
There we go.
And
yeah.
the freeway scene. That's another good action scene. This is where he finally meets up with Winter Soldier. They
They Black Widow crash, and Winter Soldier
they go crashing, a bit. They go crashing down off the freeway into another street, and that's when he takes the mask off and he sees Bucky.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Who's Bucky?" You know, and so that was a good. Cap's freaking out. Bucky doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, so he's still trying to kill him.
Yeah.
But we get a lot of Black Widow versus Winter Soldier right here.
The hand-to-hand combat between Captain America and Bucky was fucking awesome.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
His Bucky's knife skills were on par. Or whoever stuntman played Bucky, those knife skills were on par, man. They were awesome.
They do end up getting captured because of the revelation, because he freaked him out so bad.
Yeah.
They all got captured.
But they escape because one of the guards in the truck...
Maria Hill.
It was Maria Hill. Yeah. Agent Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they escape again, and they go into the tunnels, and she takes them to go see Fury, who's...
Ta-da!
Yeah, he's alive and well. Well, not well, but he's alive.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where they lay out their plan, their game plan. This is where they find out about the microchips they need to put into all the helicarriers. Okay, so they infiltrate S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters. Cap gets on the megaphone, and he lets everybody know...
What's going on.
What, hey, you're not working for S.H.I.E.L.D., you're working for HYDRA. Because, you know, not everybody...
Is, they're not all moles.
Yeah. So he's got to let all them know, hey, you're working with the enemy here. Okay, so that's when...
You're flipping the page. Good Lord.
Okay, so we see Cap and Falcon. They're going to the helicarriers. They're putting these circuit boards in there.
Yeah.
But we don't see Widow anywhere. Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
We find out Pierce is with all the other major heads of S.H.I.E.L.D., like the... I can't remember what they call themselves.
Global something or other.
Yeah.
Assholes Anonymous.
There you go. Close enough, right?
Yeah.
So there's the one of the female one. It turns out that's actually Widow. She's in disguise. And she tries to stop Pierce doing what she's doing.
So she leaks everything.
She goes on the internet. And she
goes full Napster on him.
Yeah, pretty much. And she... or Snowden, I guess? She goes full Snowden. And she just... Reveals all the info on
everyone.
S.H.I.E.L.D., HYDRA. It's all on the internet now. It's out there in the open. So, again, which affects agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now, everybody knows who S.H.I.E.L.D. is. Everybody knows what the fuck HYDRA is. And it got all topsy-turvy on there. So, Cap and Falcon, they do end up taking down the helicarriers. And on the last one, Cap fights Winter Soldier again. But he does at the last very second, and he puts the chip in right when he needs to.
And then they program all the ships to attack each other so that they take each other out.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So and that's when they them two fight. Fury comes back to make his grand reappearance. He ends up killing Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. That's pretty much my notes that I have for that. But Cap and Winter Soldier, they go through the bottom of while the helicarrier is crashing.
Yeah. There's and a Winter Soldier saves them, pulls them up from the water to keep them from drowning.
Yeah. And then
and he splits.
Yeah. And then post credit scene. Well, hold on, let me see. There was, I think it's post credit where Bucky, Winter Soldier, he goes into that same Captain America museum and he's watching.
He learns
all about Bucky about himself. But at the end of this, there's a scene in the cemetery where they have a tombstone for Fury, and he's basically
Dead to them.
He's dead to the world. He's on his own. He's oh, he takes the eye patch off and he burns his safe house or whatever it was. Yeah. So Fury's gone. Cap and Falcon, they're back to doing their thing. I think Widow's with them too. What happens?
Widow, all the secrets that she leaked exposes her past.
That's right.
So she's off on her own looking for her own redemption. While Cap and Falcon are gonna go off to find Winter Soldier, because Cap's like, yeah. So I'm gonna. It's a search and rescue now, and Cap and Falcon's like, well, I got your back, and that's how the movie ends.
Yeah.
Until we get the post credit about Bucky learning that. He's not a bad guy.
No, that's the first post-credit scene. There's a second one that actually sets up Age of Ultron, where we see Von Strucker. He's in his base headquarters, and he talks about...
No, it sets up Civil War, not Ultron.
No, it does, because it introduces the twins.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they're in their cells.
Yeah,
and you see Quicksilver bouncing around.
I was thinking something.
Yeah, you see Scarlet Witch doing the thing, and Quicksilver bouncing around the walls. And you said this is the Age of Miracles because
that's the new because they can't use the word mutants.
Yeah, because they can't say mutants. Ugh, whatever. So, pros is the political spy thriller just worked like bananas.
There were enough fight scenes in this movie to make it not your complete old
school. The Fury ambush scene and the freeway attack scene. I thought those were two awesome fight.
The elevator scene fight
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
basically everything. I'm telling you, I can't find a flaw in it.
Okay.
If anything, now you just gave me a flaw that was fucking Peggy Carter. I couldn't fucking tell, but even then, that's not even fair. So I have no flaws.
Okay, so Jesus Christ. All right, I struggle to find something bad with this movie. I got one. And this is not a con, it's a nitpick. Okay? When they're
oh my god, it's a hybrid motorcycle! Blah.
Okay, two. No, just kidding. when they're interrogating Agent Sitwell on the rooftop, he talks about all these targets that they have. And one of them, he says, Stephen Strange.
Oh, yeah.
And at this point, Doctor Strange isn't out for a year or 2 years at least. Mm-hmm. I don't know what kind of timeline they have, but there's no way that Artem Zola's algorithm would have known that Stephen Strange would have gotten into a car accident. And
I think that's just an Easter egg to drop because I think Spider-Man 1 or 2 also dropped Stephen's... when they were trying to find a name for Dr. Octopus, somebody said Dr. Strange. They said, oh, no, but that name's already taken. So that name's already... So that's more of a name drop as opposed to that's part of the Marvel Universe. I doubt that 5 years ago they had to plan to do Doctor Strange.
I don't know. This is what happens when you start getting into different phases in 15, 20 different movies. You got to start that red string.
Yeah.
That started getting knotted up really quick.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay. So that's like I said, it's a nitpick, right? Uh-huh. Okay. So, okay. I watched it with my wife recently.
Mm-hmm. Oh, snap.
She had a nitpick.
Uh-oh.
Do you want to know what this nitpick is? All right. She says, this is from my wife, I don't like how his hair is dark but light on the top. Talking about Captain America.
Oh, my God.
Now,
Chris Evans is not at a point in his career that he needs to learn how to use Just for Men.
Mind you.
It's your wife.
This was into three glasses of wine. Followed by... I don't like the way he looks in khakis. Those are my complaints about Winter Soldier.
She sounds like a keeper, man. If that's all she could find fault in. All
right, so that was Winter Soldier. Now
that's chapter one, the sequels. You want to take a break?
I think we're going to have to.
Cease your yammering and relieve us from this irksome confinement.
Yeah, I'll have to agree with the walking thesaurus on that one.
Do not ever call me a thesaurus.
All right, folks, we're going to take a pause right here for now and continue our Marvel Phase 2 thoughts in our next episode, talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, Age of Ultron, and Ant-Man. If you're having a good time with us, please help us out by going to iTunes and leaving a rate and review for the show. We'd greatly appreciate it. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/popculturerewind and on Twitter at popculturerwnd. You can also find all of our past episodes online at popculturerewind.com. And for some fun, exclusive videos that I've done for you folks, check out our YouTube channel and hit the subscribe button. Thanks again for checking us out, and as always, don't forget to pop your culture!
Some people call me a terrorist. I consider myself a teacher.
America. Ready for... another lesson.
In 1864 in Sand Creek, Colorado, the U.S. military waited till the friendly Cheyenne Braves had all gone hunting, waited to attack and slaughter the families left behind and claim their land. 39 hours ago, the Ali al-Salam Air Base in Kuwait was attacked.
I did that.
A quaint military church filled with wives and children, of course. The soldiers were out on maneuvers. The Braves were away. President Ellis, you continue to resist my attempts to educate you, sir. And now you've missed me again. You know who I am. You don't know where I am. And you'll never see me coming.